the fact that it still resonates with the culture and people now is just, it's wonderful.
Is that what you think why people keep loving the film so much? Because
it's a number of things. Okay. First of all, it's you. It's the fight, and it's what it's about, and it's the kind of movie that it is. I think that's what gets them. And they also love your line. They love that line that you wrote.
I've told it many different ways, the line. You know, sometimes when you do as many interviews as I do, you gotta craft. And, you know, I was like, and I can't remember where the doggone line came from until I'd be going 80 miles an hour down the road. My left knee was driving. It was a yellow Lincoln Mark IV, had a case of beer in the right seat, the dome lights on, 8-track stereo on there, a yeller pad, and a pencil. Yeah. And I just kept going through them. And I always thought, you know, I was always told it like this. John said, action. And then John said, hold the roll. Roddy, you got bullets and sunglasses. You need to go in the bank. You're not going to rob it. Say something. I'm all out of bubblegum. Lunch. You know, it was a creative way. But
sure.
I just don't really know how it did really get in there.
Well, you gave me the sheet of paper that you had from all the interviews that you'd done over the years with various wrestlers. You'd written down phrases. You'd written them down in that Mark IV in the middle of the night. You'd written them down on airplanes. You had to come up with stuff to say in those interview days, okay? And
huge.
I believe it, well, yeah, all the time. You had to do it constantly.
Constantly.
I believe that your line, I'm all out of bubblegum line, was when you were facing Playboy Buddy Rose. You remember who he is?
I sure do.
Yep.
And you're right.
You had written it down, Playboy Buddy Rose, blah, 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 blah. I'm here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. That's where it came from.
Do you still have those books?
You know, I don't know. I don't think I do.
You should put them in your
museum. You just gave it to me. You said, take a look at this. Here's who I am. Here's what I've written. Here's where I came from. So I started reading it and said, well, this is some great stuff.
Baby Oil and Blow, our favorite wrestling show about 80s wrestling and bullshit references.
I've kind of forced the end in there, but you get it.
No, it worked.
It became our favorite Green Day song of the evening. Because every night we pick one.
Podcast with two white guys.
Oh.
Yeah.
Poof. We got honorary soul, you know?
Yeah,
it ain't all white here, brother.
I've been told that.
It ain't all white.
No, you're right.
I get quite a few head nods.
My heart,
approving head nods.
My heart's got a lot of disco in it. I'll tell you that right now.
Ooh, hootie, tootie, disco cutie. He is the Keith David to my Roddy Roddy Piper. Oh. I'm talking Nate Adams, and of course I'm the big time.
Ahoy.
Matt O.
Ahoy, everybody. I was hoping you were going to say that I was the Keith David to your David Keith. That would have been a nice tag team.
He's there. Keith David to my David Carradine.
Still not sure who David Keith is. I know he's somebody
out there, though.
He's somebody who exists. You know, we're referencing these obscure actors because you've stumbled into the second edition of Baby Oil and Blow at the Movies.
They're gonna put me in the movies. That's a good song.
Yeah.
Yeah. All we gotta do is listen to Baby Oil and Blow.
I like that other one he does too.
Yep.
You know the one.
Yeah.
They let Ringo sing two or three, I think.
Yeah.
This is a vast career.
All I got is a photography.
Now he just gets to tour around with amazing studio musicians and sing his like two or three songs, and it's a living.
And every once in a while, Paul acknowledges he's still alive.
Yep.
You remember that song from the 90s?
I hung it on me wall.
You remember that? oh, Marge's painting. It was fab. You remember that song from the, I think it was early aughts, that this is my United States of whatever.
Yeah, this is a really good one.
Ringo played the drums on that.
Impressive.
Yeah.
I would have never guessed.
Had a Syphil and Ollie-like video.
Hi, everybody. We're going to talk to Chester for a while. Hey, man.
Hey.
Can we have some advice from you about women and love?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. The king.
Okay. What? When do you think is the right time to tell a girl that you like her?
I don't know. Maybe in the car wash or something, where it's quiet.
Okay. Well, have you ever been in a fight over a woman?
I've kind of done some drive-bys in that direction.
You've done drive-bys for a woman?
Yeah, drove by their house a couple different times in a day.
Okay, do you know the language of love?
Yes, like...
How's it go?
Sure. Like, hey, Fruity Lips. Come on home with me, Sugar Butt.
Sugar Butt?
Yeah.
Kinda you like, call the girl Sugar Butt?
Yeah, and I keep cereal in my pocket to feed him.
Okay. Well, thanks, Chester.
Okay, just keep all the stuff under wraps, all right?
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
I like his stupid look on his face.
Yeah, I mean, that's Bob, that bag and head.
He's drumming, like, just back and forth.
Nate,
back
and forth. Back and forth. Let's get real, though.
Back and forth.
Like, we're not here to talk about how great Ringo is, but I will talk to you about that anytime.
Yeah, well, I'll just wait. I'll have my Ringo podcast, and I'll talk about it on there. It's probably going to want to, like, fucking single host it Joey Styles style just because I'm gonna have so much stuff to get in there, like,
oh my god,
I'm not gonna want any back and forth. It's gonna be really information dense, this podcast I do about Ringo. What do you want to talk about now, though?
Let's give the people what they want. Backlash 2018 results, you know.
Wait, that hasn't even happened.
Yeah, no, it happened.
Well, it's in process. We're recording it and we didn't watch it, so
what's your biggest boldest prediction of Backlash?
Tell me the card. Tonight.
All right, ready? I'm going to let you pick. You got.
Is this officially our opening?
Yeah,
new,
we'll just get it over for you. Yeah.
Segment.
You don't have to do another one. Miz versus Seth Rollins for the IC title.
Seth Rollins wins.
You are correct. He did win. Nia Jax.
How do you know this shit? We were just watching movies.
I keep up with the shit.
Brother Davey R. Scheister texting you the results.
Doesn't matter. I got my ways. Nia Jax versus Alexa Bliss for the Raw Women's Championship.
Oh, I got it. Nia's got to retain. You can't.
She did. She
so
did
quick.
Indeed. You've two for two. You're good. Mm-hmm. What else did they have? I think you got Jeff Hardy versus Randy Orton for the United States Championship.
Who's the champion?
Jeff Hardy.
I'm going to say there's no reason to put that on Randy Orton. We'll just have Jeff Hardy retain.
I think he did. Big Cass versus Daniel Bryan.
No contest?
Daniel Bryan in 7 minutes.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They need to put Bryan over in that match, but I just didn't have the faith that they did. Maybe just ended in like a DQ or something.
You still
laid him out with a bunch of chairs or something.
You got Samoa Joe versus Roman Reigns.
I'd like to see Joe win to further a Roman is a loser storyline. Probably not, though.
But
probably
Vince, not, though. Vince isn't going to buy into that. Yeah, no. This is where he gets his big victory back.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen.
And then you got, what are our championship matches? Oh, Shinsuke.
Knox versus AJ. Knox
no DQ.
Versus AJ.
No DQ.
Oh, I didn't know that. I was going to say Knock gets the win here so he can win it by being a heel and then get a little bit of a heel run, but no DQ throws a wrinkle into it. Now I don't know what to think.
How about this? WWE doesn't have real heels, right?
That's very true.
They're all chicken shit.
Mm-hmm.
So Joe most likely loses to Roman.
Mm-hmm.
So Joe comes out all pissed off and he's got to take it out on AJ Styles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Allowing Nakamura to pick up the cheap victory.
Yeah, that could be it.
I could see that.
But then you got, what, Joe is the heel challenger to Knock, who's now a heel champion? Like,
no, you just let Knock do some things and beat some nobodies while AJ and Joe figure out who's number one contender.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to go on a limb and say AJ retains.
Yeah, that's fine. And then the, Brock's not on the card, so that's that, I guess. Well, I think you might. Oh, Charlotte and Carmella.
Okay, Charlotte has lost the title to Carmella in a Money in the Bank briefcase situation. I don't think they're going long-term with Carmella as a champion. I think this is just a storyline thing. There's probably like a 60% chance Charlotte wins it right back to keep her strong, 40% chance something screwy happens with a bunch of interference just to keep it on Carmella for a second, just so they can stretch this out for like another month until they put it back on Charlotte.
There you go.
Does that count as a prediction?
No, it does, because I was just going to say they line up the Iconics that just came up from NXT with Carmella. And
who are they?
They're just two white women from NXT.
Oh, good for them. Yeah, if she's got a crew now, she'll win it just by extreme, like maybe even the match gets thrown out and then we'll do like six or seven.
She doesn't have a crew, but I feel like they could align themselves with her for storyline purposes.
Six or seven rematches, because that's the name of the game in modern wrestling. Every single fucking feud. Six or seven rematches. You hear that rattling?
Yeah.
Getting to the bottom of our drinks here.
We got some real mixed drinks going today.
We've really been boozing it up.
Just got some... Walk us through this. What do we got? What are we calling this?
Flavors of Barbados. The corn and oil. Drink as old as time.
Not the baby oil and blow.
Got some corn and oil and blow.
The corn and oil and blow.
Some Falernum. Some blackstrap rum, that rich, dark, heavy rum.
My goodness. And I hate rum, but this is delicious. Lime,
a little bit of Angostura bitters. The taste of the islands. Taste of the islands right down our throats. That's why this is not just one of your typical two white guy podcasts. We really got some culture here.
No. We're booze like...
looking at things from world all different sorts gentlemen. Of points of view. We can be sure those snarky white guys just, cutting down niche entertainment for our own amusement, very masturbatory. Also, we could get real with you and get emotional with you and be like, hey, people of Barbados, let's talk about your day-to-day life.
But
we haven't done that yet. I mean, maybe we'll do it sometime.
Don't get it twisted, son.
Is Kofi Kingston from Barbados? Maybe we'll get an interview with him many times.
Absolutely.
I forget where they're sending me from.
Is he from Ganja?
I wish I got some ganja.
What am I thinking? Gawan.
Ganja and Hess. That's
Ganja and Hess.
Boring, artsy vampire movie.
Yeah, it was a movie. We saw it. He's got a new movie that just got put back together in some kind of weird cut.
Kofi Kingston does?
No, the dude who made Ganja and Hess. But that's for a different show altogether.
Not necessarily. It's we're like baby and blow at the movies right here.
It's like some kind of Raisin in the Sun 5-hour television movie thing he did.
Oh, I could see that, very special event adaptation of Raisin in the Sun. Oprah had a handle in also producing or something, I would assume.
But I tell you what, talking about
Oprah's
the world.
Got lots of fingers and lots of pies.
Talking about the different people.
Figuratively and literally.
Just like Oprah, we are...
In this metaphor, the pies are vaginas.
Ooh, wow.
The hammer is my penis.
Just like Oprah,
allegedly.
We are the human power elite. And we are here to talk about one thing today.
It?
It's not about the Davy Crockett.
No, not this week.
It's not about the Bobby the Brain Heenans.
Maybe next week.
It's about one man and a conquest. To stop the powers that be.
It sounds like we're officially getting into a rundown right now. Let's do a rundown on this very special episode of Baby Oil and Blow at the Movies. We're watching 1988's They Live, directed by John Carpenter, starring Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Cheers to that.
Oh, there we go. Popping bottles, popping cans. We got a lot of stuff going on here.
Bottles and cans, just clapping hands.
So, I went to the IMDb entry for this movie we got here.
Well, who paid for our rundown, man? We still getting money for this shit?
Blumhouse paid for it so that we'd talk about their upcoming Halloween remake, which will be scored by John Carpenter and is being written by those guys from Eastbound and Down. Blumhouse sounds like an interesting little project.
Back to our music talk. You see, John Carpenter wrote that Halloween theme song in 5/4 time signature, which is to make it more off-putting.
What's really interesting is that Ringo played drums on it.
This is a fab, scary film you made. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that mask. Mighty frightening.
Some people have said it's the most drum-heavy score since Black Panther.
Ooh, probably since Suspiria.
I'm not sure the timeline on when these movies came out. Either way, I went to the IMDb entry. Their plot synopsis.
Okay.
Very simple. This is going to be our rundown.
All right.
A drifter discovers a pair of sunglasses that allow him to wake up to the fact that aliens have taken over the Earth. Boom, that's it.
Yeah, that's all you need. Wow, that's right to the point there,
right,
huh?
Right to the point. Right to the point.
Whew. Blumhouse paid for us to do this?
Yeah, they're giving
for
us
those,
money.
Like, three words there that you just said?
Busting out, they're branching out into the podcast world. They've got their own little horror movie podcast. What are those people called? Shockwaves. Check them out. Four people, very smart about horror movies, very that, nice individuals.
That James Wan, he's making that new Aquaman
movie.
Go
watch all their new stuff. And
they're going to let DC, Warner, they're going to let Blumhouse get in on that Aquaman?
No, I don't think so. No, I think Warner Brothers has got a tight corporate handle on all that
stuff. I tell you what, Aquaman's the only one I'm excited to see about.
I'll tell you what, I'm not excited about any of that because they're just controlled by corporate overlords, just like in They Live, where aliens have basically replaced our ruling class. Let's aliens. Branch us out a little bit. That drifter we talked about is Rowdy Piper.
Roddy the Piper.
He's walking around dressed like he's in Oregon, but he's in Los Angeles.
I didn't see him wear a hat once like Billy Jack Haynes, so you take those words back.
Picking up day labor jobs in L.A. There's some weirdo homeless people in a church that have created sunglasses.
They have.
Magically somehow make it so that you can see that who are the aliens and who are not the aliens.
A guy from Deadwood, he's got something to do with that church. No, he works for Cy Tolliver.
Beholden to no human cocksucker. For any of these limber dick cocksuckers. Godless heathen cocksuckers. And fuck us all anyway for the limber dick cocksuckers we are.
Heathen cocksuckers.
Cocksuckers, cocksucker.
Cocksuckers.
Cocksuckers.
Cocksucker.
Cocksucker!
That cocksucker.
Greasy haired limey cocksucker!
And Al Swearengen is in this movie.
You see, Powers Booth.
So then once he finds out that half the people are like skull-looking weird aliens and they're trying to brainwash us through TV and advertising, he gets a bunch of machine guns and he blows them all away. That's a little bit more of a, I guess, drawn-out plot synopsis there.
I feel like you gave away the whole podcast now, though.
Well, yeah. Machine guns, now we got blowing aliens away. Well, yeah, that's basically all I got out of this. Either way, let's get into this loose five count. I mean, We've been downing a bunch of Barbados cocktails and just watching this thing 2 seconds ago, so I'm not going to say we got all these 5 points like we usually do.
I'm going to let you.
Let's just run through some points.
I'm going to let you.
We'll get to five.
I'm going to let you pimp another passion of yours.
Five count.
You like to review the films.
Oh yeah.
Tell the people where they can see some of that. You know.
Oh yeah, I haven't been doing that anymore.
Yeah, do it here and there. You do the little letterbox thing.
Yeah, I do have a nice letterboxed account, and it's a great service where you can review movies and talk to other people who are reviewing movies.
I tell you what, I enjoy it a lot because it's quick, it's to the point.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the rundown.
It makes writing movie reviews fun because it's already got all the information about the movies right on the page. It's got the cast, the crew.
You just put
it's
a little
got the plot synopsis, and then you say what you think.
Poop in there.
You don't got to do all these professional movie review things where you're like, oh, here's my paragraph where I do the plot. Here's my paragraph where I talk to you about who made this.
If somebody wants
to get to the point, man.
If somebody wants to see your ideas about these films, how do they find that on the letterboxes?
I think I'm Temple of Reviews on the letterbox. That's my username.
Temple of Reviews.
TempleofReviews.com is my old blog where I used to review movies. And for many years, I was writing daily movie news and the occasional feature and movie review at FilmSchoolRejects.com.
Ooh,
we're still going strong.
Shout out.
They've acquired One Perfect Shot, which is a very...
I didn't realize they did.
It's a big, very popular Twitter thing and a blog of its own. It's
nice
all
to
merged.
Check out.
It's become quite the conglomerate. It's just a bunch of movie dorks doing great stuff. So, yeah, we're deep into talking about movie stuff here. Go check out those people at OnePerfectShot.com/FilmSchoolRejects.
It's not too snobby either. I mean, they're going like good movies, it's not like just...
They got my boy Rob Hunter as the main critic over there. He watches a lot of made-for-TV miniseries from the 70s and just, B-roll splatter schlock nonsense.
Yeah, it's a mix of everything.
Writes about him all the time. He's a real sleazeball. Check out Rob Hunter.
Well, since you're the movie buff, I'm gonna let you kind of just walk us through a five count here.
Okay, here we
go. I'm just gonna give you the color commentary.
It's okay, this is a little
you're
bit
JR.
Of a,
I'm King tonight.
Trying to pay. I don't know if we're going to live up to that. Let's say that...
hyping puppies the entire time.
You're going to be my color man, Mark Madden.
Ooh, even better.
I'm going to be... I couldn't come up with the name of that late 2000s or early 2000s WCW guy who was there at the very end, who wasn't Tony. Scott Hudson.
Oh, that's yeah. What we're
gonna do. Okay, I hit it.
Oh, I forgot they did that.
I'm going to be Scott Hudson, and you're going to be Mark Madden here. I'm gonna
now that we've established that, this is the perfect time to hit pause and go to a different episode.
Oh, don't bail out so soon. We might come up with some gold here. Who
there
knows?
There you go.
The five count. Okay, let's get into it. Number one, let's just start off at the very beginning of the movie.
Okay.
We've got
the hot rod.
Our first little taste of John Carpenter's score. It's very Western, very just cool, like minimal but menacing. And we just got images of the hot rod walking through the streets with his big pack on his back.
Yeah.
He's got his jeans. He's got his flannel tucked into his jeans. And it just sets up a Western vibe. It feels like you're about to watch a modern Western.
Got Western, but with that like down and dirty Lethal Weapon bluesiness to it.
Yeah,
you
a little
know?
Bit of that, and also a little bit of Mel Gibson's like mullet in that first Lethal Weapon.
Absolutely,
that's
pretty
much exactly what Hot Rod's rocking here. So that
yeah,
looks
if you kind of yeah, if you take Mel Gibson out of Lethal Weapon, you take the absolute grassroots bluesiness of the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Take the saxophone out. We don't got room for the saxophone. We don't
no,
have budget.
No. This is
John Carpenter can't play saxophone. Yep. So you get the just the grassroots bluesiness.
That's basically, it. That's
Gibson's mullet, and then you just you throw that into a Western. Yeah, that's the opening
shot.
I always
heard that John Carpenter was just super into Westerns, and growing up, he was all about Westerns. And if you look at his career, he's always taken sort of these Western tropes and he's throwing them in, baking them into his stuff. You got that like Assault on Precinct 13.
Yeah.
That's basically Rio Bravo or El Dorado
there,
like a siege movie. Right here, you got a stranger coming to town. He finds out like the town's not going great because the rich guy in charge of the town's oppressing the people. And he's got to liberate them. That's just a standard Western move, or you know,
I was
going to
say this has the
times.
This has the very slow burner mystery stranger guy that doesn't really have a name. The same way like the first two Man with No Name trilogy.
There you go.
You know, like
for like
Fistful of Dollars or a Few Dollars More.
The
like,
first act, you get like slow burn stuff like that. But then suddenly there's just machine gun fire and it's just a bloodbath from that point on.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
It just turns on a dime and there's just blood everywhere.
But yeah,
I've heard though, Carpenter kind of just afraid to work with horses. So he's never really made a real Western.
Is that real?
that's what I've always heard him say. Just like,
that's a great.
Yeah, like I don't want to fucking work with horses.
Fucking, I'm making a science fiction film.
I don't
know
how to do all that stuff. So he just kind of makes other kinds of movies and just turns them into his own little version of Westerns.
That's kind of awesome though. Well, I don't know, man. Like, because this is what, 80 what? They live 88. This 88. All right, so like Westerns were dead at this point.
Oh, no, yeah, there was no money in making Westerns in
Westerns
the 80s.
Are absolutely
or the
dead.
90s. Like you had
Tombstone.
Yeah, Tombstone,
you got,
total outlier. Like,
what was the other fucking one?
Nowhere.
That Wyatt Earp.
Well, nobody wanted to watch Wyatt
Earp.
Yeah,
but
though.
It did dollars compared to other.
Because Kevin Costner was in it, man. He was big shit at the
Why
time.
Why did people follow
right
Costner
that,
for so long?
Coming right off that Waterworld success, so people were like, we gotta check in on this.
And he also did Dances with Wolves, which is like an even more
boring
Western.
Well, I mean, Dances with Wolves was
Western.
The legit success that got him the clout to make a couple of those like sprawling three-hour movies.
What was the
row?
Other one, like something?
The Postman?
No, like Open Range or something.
Where are we? You're in Bridge City.
Where we don't allow guns. Sentry said you were coming.
I know you. You're famous.
I was once.
Sort of. Kind of. Not anymore.
Oh, you're talking about westerns from the 90s?
Yeah, he did one. I want to say it's like Open Range. It's Costner, and it's just...
I didn't even know Costner did boring. Multiple westerns.
No one wanted to see it, and oh god, I don't know.
Jeez.
Fuck, we don't want to see another one of these.
After a few decades of the western basically being the superhero movie of its day,
absolutely. There you go.
Three or four westerns that came out every week. Literally, just if you want to get into westerns, good luck. I've been trying to finally get into them the last 5 years or so, and there's
I got a handful of what I like.
There's 7,000, there's 8,000, 9,000 westerns. It just the culture got burned out on them there for a while, and then. And the 80s and 90s, other than one or two that, like, poked through, there was just not much you could be doing making a Western. So, you know, A, John Carpenter doesn't want to work with horses. Smart.
Well, I was wrong. Open Range was 2003, and it's with a Bobby Duvall.
Oh, wow. There's a lot of different stuff going on in there.
Do you think
He's like when you put, like, the dog's medicine in some peanut butter, and then you smear the peanut butter on your dick.
And you think it's not
and
so
then
bad? Yeah.
That's how you get the dog to take his medicine. Yeah. Like, that's basically what Carpenter was doing here. He was trying to get us to take our Western
medicine.
You've
never owned a dog, have you?
No.
Yeah.
Is that not what you do?
No, you're good. You're good. You're doing good.
I think my metaphor is that's what he was doing. He was trying to get these Western tropes into our heads by, you know, dressing them up a little bit. I'm going to put them in a sci-fi movie over here. I'm going to put them in an action movie. Yeah. You're not even going to know you're watching a Western, you dumb plebes.
Oh, okay, so this is 88.
Mm-hmm.
Westerns are officially dead.
Mm-hmm.
If Carpenter had the chutzpah to make this an absolute Western.
Oh, sure.
You think it just would have been like the biggest commercial failure, or would have been like, finally, people are ready to see Westerns again?
Well, I think that I would really like to see Roddy Piper trying to do some sort of old Western accent.
Be real excuse good. Me, I'm sorry, did you not watch any of the Lonesome Dove with Bret Hart in it?
Wait, no.
He was in a lot of it.
Oh, God. I had no idea.
You don't remember that era?
No.
Oh, God. Every night on, like, Raw, they'd be like, don't forget, Bret Hart's on Lonesome Dove. Check that out.
I did not even know there was any sort of...
Hey, you know, I'm a cowboy. The other day, you stole the cows from the range over there, and those were your cows, and I gotta tell you what, that day I lost all respect for you. Oh,
somebody just walked through my backyard. I really gotta hope that it's just the lady who lives here that doesn't want to disturb us.
That's terrifying.
Because if it's not, somebody else just walked through my backyard. I just saw it right through the fucking window.
Dude, we might be getting strangered right now.
If we get strangered, it's all gonna be recorded. But then if we die, there's not gonna be anybody necessarily to send this file out. So should we just stop it and send it out right now? We've
I don't
come
know,
to a real impasse.
I still can't hear the back door. So
no, me either. But she's gonna fumble around for a while. She's probably high, quite frankly, and there's no porch light on back there, so this is very interesting.
We'll see how it works out. That Western Asian hamamachi, it's got a hole on her.
Good thing we didn't watch one of John Carpenter's horror movies, or I'd be real jumpy right now.
Oh, I'm glad you can see the window and not me.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of Bret Hart and Lonesome Dove, and his apparent love for Westerns that no one was really aware about, except for women watching Lonesome Dove in the 90s.
Yeah, and you paying attention to the Raw promos.
So if WWE... or it was WWF back then, or maybe it had changed by then, I don't know. If they had WWE films back then...
Oh, yeah, that would have been nice.
You think we could have got, like, a Wyatt Earp movie, but all the Earp boys are played by Hart family members?
Brothers, and then, like,
you got a
showdown at the OK Corral, he has to shoot out Shawn Michaels and then a bunch of jobbers under masks.
Yeah, duh.
It was originally supposed to be Jerry the King Lawler was going to be at the showdown at the OK Corral, but then, you know, he had to drop out for various reasons. Or maybe was it the other way around?
What'd you do with those kids? No, that was Jerry Lawler.
Okay, so it ended up being Shawn Michaels and jobbers under masks. Either way, I just remember that pay-per-view being a disaster.
Yeah.
Calgary is known for its horses, so, you know. I heard that when Bret was coming into the WWF, Vince was trying to make him Cowboy Bret Hart.
Oh, yeah.
Really
yeah.
fight against it to stop that.
Yeah.
It sounds stupid to us, a cowboy with a Canadian accent, but, you know.
I guess it's a thing,
man. You go up
man.
To Calgary, all I you see is fucking thing. Cowboys.
Take off, eh?
I can't picture it. It's weird. I'm never going to go to Calgary.
I feel like I've been there.
Have you? Or do you just feel like you've been there? Just is this like a thousand-yard like stare thing you got going on?
Yeah, I just feel like every once in a while, like, you know, you get to that place where you just don't know if time's really moving anymore and you're questioning what you're doing with your life. And I'm just like, it's like all that time I spent growing up in Calgary.
Mm. Moving on, let's sort of do like a number two here. I want to talk a little bit about the thematics of this movie and how it just sets up a class war so well
yeah.
from the very beginning.
This is right in the midst of Reaganomics, sir.
Yeah.
Never has there been a more exciting time to be alive. A time of rousing wonder and heroic achievement. As they said in the film, Back to the Future, where we're going, we don't need roads.
This movie is just socialist as fuck. This is John Carpenter at his most, like, middle finger up in the air to the ruling class right here. I feel like he's had a little bit of some strife in Hollywood, trying to get pictures together, trying to get things made, people interfering with what he wants to do, telling him he's got to do this, he can't do that, and he's... His normal, just like, this guy's a fucking rebel. He's looking to buck the system, and I feel like he's a little bit agitated here. And this movie is much more of just like a B movie than anything else he made back here in like his
That's his true, prime. Man. Like, this is 88. This is after The Thing. This is after Big Trouble in Little China. Show your face, mystery person. We saw you walk through the backyard.
Is it okay, it's
all
just
right,
her.
Yeah, that's the person you live with.
Thank God. I don't have to go out and knife
that was
anybody.
Terrifying.
Gut them like a fucking fish.
Oh, God. I thought, yeah. Okay, we're not getting strangered anymore, so we're good. We're good. Well, it's too soon to tell.
That's true.
But yeah, this is after this is a pretty rough crowd. This is after Big Trouble in Little China. This is after Escape from New York.
And, like, there's all legit things about those movies, like, whether it be, like, a mainstream actor or a little bit of a budget somebody was giving him or just, like, any sort of appeal that, like, can be marketed. Well, not Big Trouble in Little China. That's one of the weirdest movies ever. But,
it
seems
great.
Like he was shooting to make money for all those. And then this one's just straight up weird grindhouse, like all small obscure actors or pro wrestlers. Like the sets are all just literally like hobo camps out in empty lots in LA or like hallways and office buildings. Like this thing is really just shot on a shoestring fucking budget. And, I don't know. I feel like it all just adds to the whole us versus them, rich people versus poor people dynamic that gets set up with this.
There's so much.
The rich people are aliens. They're trying to control us. Poor people are the only real people. Fucking Bernie Sanders would have won. Hashtag political revolution stuff going on here.
There's so many great scenes. Like they keep kind of shooting the same locations. The hobo village, the alley,
they shoot that hobo village so warmly and so lovingly that like I see myself just wanting to move into that hobo village.
And they keep
she's peeking at us again.
They keep coming back to those spots, but every time they do, you just kind of catch a glimpse of like the big city in the background.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
It's that big,
like it's just like let's put the clear focus, the here and the now,
dividing line just, between the haves and the have-nots.
We got this just absolute, you know, bottom of the barrel, desolate, you know,
here's where
on
we're
your
scraping
last
to
dollar.
Get by. Here's them looming over
right
us.
Right in the background's the big
those
buildings.
Those who are in control.
The, you know, greener pastures. And I felt like they do a great job with
it. It's really just like some like political awakening type stuff. Like, hey, y'all, you need to wake up. You need to realize the system is rigged. But it's also some great propaganda. And the fact that, like, this movie does get so violent and they just slaughter so many hundreds of people.
Yeah.
With just spraying machine gun fire. But, like, you can do that in a movie as long as you, like, put a little fright makeup on people and, like, imply that they're a different, like, species.
Boo, boo.
Like, this is how these Marvel movies these days get away with shit. It's just like,
it's not killing, just
it's,
for
it's,
killing.
It's a robot, or it's like an alien or something. It's not a human.
Different. You have
and
to
as
kill
long
them.
As it's not a human, you can just show thousands of, you know, thinking sentient beings being slaughtered on camera and like still get a PG rating and like nobody thinks twice about it.
You know what's kind of fucked
not
up?
Not a thing.
Now that you mention that.
What's that?
Late 70s, a movie comes out called Star Wars.
Yeah, Starman. I remember it, another John Carpenter film.
They kind of do the same thing where they just kill a lot of people, but it's like, oh, they're wearing a white mask.
Oh, yeah.
They're stormtroopers. They're bad guys.
Took it to but a like, new level with but those prequels, too, where there was
still,
literally just...
They're still people, man.
They're clones now. They're clones. You
but
can
like
still
in
slaughter
77,
them.
You didn't know. And like,
no, I know.
They were just people under those masks. And it was like, ain't no big deal. They're bad guys.
I guess the way you're getting... rid of it there is that like nobody's visibly dying. It's laser blasts. It's not bullets.
Yeah,
people
they never
just
show their
fall
faces
down when
either.
They get hit.
They
it
got
doesn't
the
like
masks on,
very man. Rarely does it like do unless except for that one hardcore as this fuck scene where Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru just they show their burned smoldering skeletons after
well,
that.
Yeah.
It's like A-team violence, like G.I. Joe cartoon violence, or just like people getting hit with laser blasts and falling over. And then there's just that one fucking scene where Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru's flaming, smoldering skeletons are shown. It's like, goddamn Star Wars, you really killed off that just nice middle-aged couple.
Yeah, yeah.
Very clearly.
Hope they're all right.
Yeah, at the center of this movie is just a very, very strong class warfare, very just
us and them.
Strong us versus them message, and more so than any of other Carpenter stuff, this one gets political, and it starts showing his personality and his beliefs a little bit more, whereas the rest of them are kind of a little bit more detached. They're out in fairy tale land, or they're... You got Halloween, like a simple story about a psychopath killing some teenagers. You got Christine. It's like a killer car killing people.
Oh, yeah. He directed that. Yeah.
Christine's real good. That's probably one of his most underrated ones, I'd say.
When
first
we
of all, maybe my favorite Carpenter score. And you're talking Carpenter. You got to talk his fucking scores. Second of all, the special effects on just like that shape-shifting car.
Yeah.
Like all practical, no computer stuff. It's real weird and cool what they did in that movie.
Back in our old scumbag days before we turned into the rich entrepreneurs that we are today.
Thank God those days are over.
We used to go to Walmart at like 2 in the morning.
I remember that.
And there used to be this
just
one.
Just shoveling coal into the machine.
Yep. There used to be this one.
Shoveling dollars into the mouths of the Walton family.
Yep. There was this one old woman that worked the register at the Walmart at 2 in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
I had my
I
long
where this is going.
I had my long hair back then. She always stopped me. She
God,
like,
that looked cool.
You know who you look like? You look like the boy from Christine.
Forgot that part of the story.
All right, sure. Thank you.
Wow.
And like I had
it's
never
a very
seen
specific
Christine
reference for
at the time,
old lady
and like,
working at Walmart at 3 a.m. to be making.
Like I've seen Christine and I can't even like remember like. Do I look like,
no,
did
really,
I look like
no,
that? Probably not. She was probably just like high on bath salts or whatever.
Certainly high on bath salts.
Yeah, but that's the only thing.
No. Like, there's nothing going on at that Walmart that's going to compare to the Walmarts down in southern Indiana.
Oh.
We had those few years where we were hanging out
started.
Down in southern Indiana.
Do not get me started,
and
man.
Here you get, like, a lot of trash. You get a lot of fucking trash of all fucking creeds and colors. Just
everyone
convening
them.
And just being scumbags and just buying shit at Walmart. Down in southern Indiana, all you get is that southern white trash.
Just and mutants, it gets man.
Real Hills of Eyes mutiny.
Just mutants.
What did we see that one day? It was a girl with a lobster claw.
Yeah, she was working there. There was like a
three or four just fucking like
some kind of
squealing like extra chromosome
Hills
children.
Have Eyes. Yeah, and I'm not, and we're not trying to make fun of like those with special needs, but like this is way past that. I mean, we were. There's like a whole family of midgets, and then we're standing in a line and we're trying to check out, and there's just a kid just like full on screaming behind us, and not just like kind of making some noise, but just like,
yeah, like it was that classic just like I'm disengaged autism,
reanimator
disengaging with the world,
and you just trying to be like, yeah, it's no big deal. And
you see one of them, and it's like, oh, that's somebody who's got some issues. You see another one, it's like, oh, that's somebody who's got this birth defect. You see another one, and it's just like, oh, that person's child has disabilities. You see all these fucking things in a row, and there's literally nobody else. It seems like they were born just like all the normal parts and in all the normal places, and it's
and
like,
it starts to make you
what's
think,
what's going
like,
on in this town?
Yeah, this isn't
what's in the ground, what's in the water?
Yeah, this isn't a case of like, you know, you got one of God's angels and you're gonna do what you can. This is a case of like, you shouldn't have married your cousin, or like maybe
stuff like that.
You shouldn't have
going
buried
down
those,
in
you know,
southern Indiana at their Walmarts,
those plutonium rods in your backyard.
That lady with the lobster claw hand seemed really nice.
She insisted on handing you your change with it, though.
I gotta say, give people their change with your other hand.
Thank you.
Not with the lobster claw. Like, we're trying to be nice and act like we don't notice. Like, do us a solid back and give us the change with the other hand, lady.
Yeah, I just, I feel like we're not going to come out heroes in this story. And it's not fair, because, like,
there are no heroes in this story.
You don't understand.
Sloth, you're going to live with me now. I'm going to take care of you. Because I love you.
I love you, Chuck.
Oh, I love you, Sloth.
Let's move on to a number three here.
Yeah, it's about time.
I want to talk about just how prescient this movie is and how it's just maybe more relevant today than it was when it came out. Starts out very early with this theme of the television. Everywhere he goes, he's walking past storefronts.
Yeah.
He's seeing TVs broadcasting through the windows. He's
there's
in
that,
a back alley.
There's that Derrick Rose looking motherfucker that's just plastered
does
to it.
Look like Derrick Rose.
He's not even moving, man. He's not even moving.
He's in a back alley. He's seeing the glow of a TV coming through a window. He's watching through somebody's window. He gets to this hobo camp. They got a TV hooked up. Everywhere he goes, there's just screens, and people are just zoned out in front of these screens. And this was in 1988 when, like, TVs all weighed, what, like 75, 80 pounds?
Oh, like, yeah, they're all console televisions.
Right now, everyone has a screen in their pocket or in their hands.
Oh, my God, it's 10 times worse than
that. You get all the billboard ads in this movie. Like, there's billboards everywhere, ads for this. The billboards now are literally screens. They're not just pictures.
Yeah.
They're changing. They're morphing. They're showing you three or four ads at once. You're going to, like, I don't know, tourist fucking traps, and the walls are made out of video screens, and everything's just pumping advertising into your head. I really just think, like,
you're following us on the Instagrams, you're following us on the Facebooks, you scroll through, there's an ad.
Everything's connected.
There's an ad.
Everything's
there's an ad
aimed towards getting in your brain. Anything you do is getting back to advertising.
Consume.
So they can advertise to you better.
Marry and reproduce.
Talking about that Blumhouse remake of Halloween, and you got, what did you have, was this Platinum Dunes idiots remaking every fucking horror movie from the 80s for like 10 years, just making them all terrible. New Texas Chainsaw Massacre, new Friday the 13th, new fucking Nightmare on Elm Street.
That's bad.
We've got this obsession with regurgitating movies, ideas, coming up with nothing new. If there's anything that could be updated to like be even more interesting and like would be relevant, I'm saying this one right here.
Absolutely.
A remake. Like, right here, they got the the sunglasses that you put on are your, like, your salvation. You put those on, you can, it cuts through the fucking shadows. You can see what's really happening.
Maybe in the new one, you have to take your Google Glass off.
That's what I'm saying, man. We've got these new shit going on. They tried Google Glasses and those failed, but we're steps away from something like that succeeding.
Yeah.
We've got watches with screens on them now. We've got little fucking plugs we're sticking in our ears. We're not quite jacking in Johnny Mnemonic style, but we're very close.
Come to Jesus.
Yeah.
The cure. The holiest of communions. And when I hold God's cure,
Jones,
I'll be God.
Please help me. Jones.
No, I like Johnny Mnemonic, man. That's a
deep cut Johnny Mnemonic reference right there, and yeah. I fully appreciate that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm saying you take this a step further. The next one, it's not a glasses you put on. It's a glasses you got to take off. You got to rip yourself completely out of this shit.
You got to unplug.
I guess there's a little bit of that stuff going on in The Matrix. We started getting that twist on it.
Yeah, but that's like a 90s. Really fucking boring, awful movie.
Wachowski said, I liked that first one okay.
No,
it was
one
only
did.
When people really started liking that movie that I had to turn against it a little bit.
I don't know which movie.
The sequels are super boring and super awful.
I don't know which movie I fell asleep harder in. The Matrix or Gladiator?
Oh,
I hate both of those movies with a passion.
I have not seen Gladiator more than like... when it came out in theaters.
Everybody talks about like those badass fighting scenes in Gladiator.
I remember there
but
being
does everybody else remember the rest of the movie where they
Gladiator.
Just talk about shit.
Well, I think back to
where
it,
they just fucking talk about
I remember
shit.
That as kind of being the proto Zack Snyder type thing, like where it's just like it's all fake backdrops and it's all slow motion, and if you cut down to the movie to the actual content, like
it's nothing.
Real people, real things.
5%
like
of a film.
Speed up all the slow motion to like be normal speed, you'd probably have like 20 minutes of movie and like that would be it. But I remember Matrix being pretty badass as just like a fucking kind of cool, kind of cyberpunk action movie. Like, I remember going with a couple of girls back in like my high school days, like one of the rare instances when I was a teenager and somehow I had stumbled into hanging out with girls. And like, they were super pumped about it. And they were like,
what kind of girls were you hanging
throwing
with,
roundhouse
man?
Kicks when we left the place. Actually, they were pretty hot. I don't even know how I ended up hanging out with those girls that night, but it worked out.
I saw 10 Things I Hate About You because I was hanging out with hot girls, man.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that
but
that's a good movie.
Cool
I saw
movie
that too.
Though, yeah.
I really like 10
cool.
Things I Hate About
it's
You.
Cool.
I could watch that right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think even like, they had that one character, Trinity. She was a lady and she was
Trinity.
She was doing, so I think that was maybe
is that
one
the,
of
the What's Her Face Moss?
Yeah.
Carrie Moss?
Carrie Moss. She looks pretty weird in the movie.
She's in something
sort of
like
Soul Sucking Vampire. She's very pale and gaunt.
She's in a
By the way, her like being like, able to do kung fu stuff got those girls jacked up. And that was the first time maybe I've seen like girls get into something nerdy and be like, oh, yeah, I'm into this nerdy thing. This is what, like 99? This is...
Girls love nerdy shit now.
No, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Now it's like huge. Back then, if you tried to talk about anything nerdy to a girl, it was
Carrie
like,
Ann
right,
Moss.
Yeah,
I'm
get the fuck out of the room, man. Leave. Shut up. Now,
no, she was in the Mementos.
Now every girl wants to talk your ear out off about how nerdy they are and how much they love nerd stuff.
But yeah.
Not in 99, and I feel like The Matrix is one of those first 99. Things that kind of got that going.
Yeah, that's fair. It's a fair thing.
So yeah, The Matrix is another step along the path, but I feel like
so
this movie, They Live, is one of those first steps, one of those getting us to where our culture is right now.
If you're remaking that movie now,
mm-hmm.
What wrestler's starring in it?
Oh, it's got to be a wrestler that's starring in it?
Oh, come on.
Okay, I'm going to throw you a curveball here.
Spoiler alert. Hold on real quick before you do. John Carpenter wanted Kurt Russell to play the lead.
Yeah, sure, sure.
But he already put him in three movies, and he was like, I want somebody rugged and burly. Mm-hmm. And he casted Roddy Piper based off of his WrestleMania 3 appearance.
And it's real interesting, too, because there's really not much dialogue in this. And Piper, and it's like...
Nope.
Kurt Russell's such a hyper-verbal actor that, like, you gotta wonder, like, was he gonna be, like, stoic and quiet, or was the movie tweaked once it was, like, we're going with a wrestler and not going with fucking great actor, Kurt
the
Russell?
The whole, I'm here to chew bubble gum and kick ass
line. Mean, you could totally picture Kurt Russell fucking nailing that delivery
but
right
here's
there.
The thing. That was a Roddy Piper ad-lib.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a real, like, stop the movie, camera stops. Yeah. Like, here's an important... It doesn't feel like something that was just thrown in there. That's interesting to hear.
Yeah, he let him ad-lib it, and Roddy Piper said that was just a line that he thought of for wrestling that he never got to use.
That's perfect.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
So I'm going to throw you a curveball here. When we're recasting, we're doing a remake of this movie right here.
What are you doing, Dolph Ziggler?
I'm not picking a wrestler because wrestlers aren't wrestlers anymore. We have new wrestlers. I'm going an MMA star. I'm putting Conor McGregor starring in this new They Live.
Oh, God.
I think that would make a lot of money if I had just his fucking crazy Irish rambling in this movie. He's got to disconnect himself from the man and be that rebel character that we know he is. I think that will work out great.
Back to the Reaganomics of this film.
Sure.
So John Carpenter really wanted Roddy to like push the Reaganomics thing.
Mm-hmm.
But Roddy, like when he was doing press junkets and shit.
All wrestlers are conservatives.
Well,
so probably
they worked
he wasn't
for
great
Vince,
with that.
So there's that. And then there was the fact that he was on a green card.
Oh, that's true.
And he was
man's from Scotland, we all know. Scottish as a motherfucker.
He's like, I'm not going to do that.
Scottish by way of fucking Vancouver or whatever.
So he that's opted against
smart.
It.
Yeah, so I'm just going to not say much in the whole press tour for this thing. We'll pretend like it's just a sci-fi movie. All this politics, we'll ignore it.
Folks, this movie debuted at number one and then disappeared from theaters a week later.
That's, I didn't know that it had a big opening weekend. That's probably like, most movies make at least like 70% of their money in their first opening. That was probably a decent haul for this movie. Though. Yeah. Much more than I would expect it to make.
I'm going
to
find you
I don't
a budget.
Get, yeah, we get that box office mojo thrown up here. Let's see what the budget was. Let's see what they made back worldwide domestic over time. I'm going to say They Live kind of thought of as a weird obscurity cult thing, but I'm going to make the guess here that it was probably financially successful.
Budget,
mm-hmm.
$4 million estimated.
Oh, man. Even in 1988 dollars, that's not too much.
So your gross this day and age, $13 million.
There you go.
Okay.
Right there.
Hold on, though.
Mm-hmm.
What did we say was the budget?
$4 million.
Made $4,827,000 opening weekend.
Opening weekend.
So made your money back. You already turned a profit.
That's his budget back. That does not count promotional stuff, though. The typical rule of that is to sign and say double the budget. That's also what you're paying in promotion. So that would take us up to like $8 million that they'd have to make back to make a profit. But that's all very
loose. Were you doing double back then? Yeah.
Probably this movie did not get a huge push because it didn't have a big star. I bet they didn't spend that much. Also, that's all very loose Hollywood economics, so they can like make money disappear and constantly claim that they're not making as much money as they are.
Still, $4 million opening weekend in 1988. I got to say, that's pretty good.
That is a big success. It's much more of a success than I would have imagined, for sure.
We got a number four?
Yes.
Is it the fight?
Definitely. We got to get to the fight.
Yeah.
It's
That's why you all tuned into this.
Centerpiece of this movie. It's the thing people always talk about coming out of it. It's the most ridiculous fucking thing.
South Park spoofed it.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah. They spoofed the entire fight.
So what I loosely looked at my watch when we were watching this. I felt like it was about 6 minutes, this fist fight. Like, goes for a legit 6 minutes long. There's a match where... we're talking wrestling here. Movies now. There's a scene where Roddy Piper's character... I don't know if he's ever named in the movie.
He is not.
But he's
not
in
at
the
all.
Credits as Nada.
That's because
so
that is
just
the,
nothing.
That is the character's name
he's
in
the
short
everyman.
Story of which it is based off
he's
of.
A blank... His one friend he's made, played by Keith David, he's trying to convince him that these aliens rule the world. He's trying to get him to put these glasses on so he can see. Keith David thinks this fucking guy's crazy. He's only just met him on a job site once or twice, and he doesn't want to put the glasses on. So they have a fist fight over whether he's going to put the sunglasses on or not. A great fist fight that just keeps going to the point where halfway through it, like, it escalates to where they're trying to cut each other with bottles and hit each other with boards, and then they just kind of, like, giggle, and they're like, what are we doing?
This
got crazy.
Like,
we shouldn't do this.
When that bottle breaks in his hand and just, like, disintegrates and Piper starts laughing, you think that was just, like, him legitimately laughing at the fact?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like, that's just, like, these guys having fun. This probably took, like, an entire day to shoot, just going over and over
Absolutely.
It again. They're just being very loose, very fun with it. It goes on. And then at that point, you're just like, oh, now they're going to, like, he's going to be like, oh, why are we fighting? I'll put the glasses on. But no, they're just we shouldn't kill each other
There's
with
like
weapons.
There's like seven times.
But
where
we're still going to keep fist fighting because, like, I disagree with your point that I should put these glasses on. Like, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to the point where once this fight is over, you get some legitimate, like, horror movie makeup done. Like, their faces are lumpy, they're fucking bruised, they're cut. They look like mutilated fucking freaks. They're walking around looking like Hills Have Eyes freaks, hanging out in the Bloomington, Indiana Walmart just, like, at 3
Ooh,
in the morning.
That's a good call
they look
right
like,
there.
You go to that. You go to that Southern Indiana Walmart. You're gonna see a couple of guys in work clothes just beat to shit, bruised and swollen.
Because they just beat each other up in the alley. Because somebody wanted the other one to wear sunglasses.
Oh, she's my first cousin. She's only your second cousin, so I get to marry her.
I'm gonna fight you. It's dynamite stuff. I mean, it's just good old fashioned like. Hollywood movie fight choreography.
Yeah, you get some, and like, then, wrestling moves thrown in there, like some suplexes, some throws, but there's nothing, like, winky where it's just, like they do in the Rock's early movies, or they'd have them, like, do a rock bottom to somebody, and then, like, the movie would stop and
he
be
does,
like, he'd turn to the audience and be like, hey,
there's the move I did
that
I do the
move. Finishing
move? You get like a short arm clothesline and a couple like belly to belly variations.
Just some stuff that he's good at, so you throw it in here so that like it can make the
But it looks
fight
natural, right, right.
Foley work is insane.
Everything I've come across suggests about a 6 minute fight scene.
Yeah, six minutes felt like what it was about, which is... God, that doesn't sound so long in today's day and age when you're talking about like these big movies with big battles that go on for like 30 minutes or whatever. But when you're talking just a one-on-one, two guys in an alley fucking hands.
You want the real fucking deal of this?
6 minutes is a really long
time.
Do
you want the real fucking deal
fucking
of this?
For that fucking act.
Because I got it.
Well, yeah, sure, yeah.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
All right. The big fight sequence was designed, rehearsed, and choreographed in the backyard of director John Carpenter's production office. The fight between Roddy Piper and Keith David was only supposed to last 20 seconds.
See, that's reasonable, and that sounds super short, but if you'd actually clock most movie fist fights, that's how long they probably actually fucking last right there.
Here we go. But Piper and David decide to fight it out for real. Only faking the hits to the face and groin. They rehearsed the fight for 3 weeks. Carpenter was so impressed. Oh, here we go.
Carpenter was so mad because they were supposed to be learning their lines for all the other scenes in the movie that he had to cut all their lines because all they wanted to do was rehearse a fight.
Here it is. I had the answer the whole time. Carpenter was so impressed he kept the 5 minutes and 20 seconds scene intact.
Yeah, like, I feel the only scene in a movie that I can think of that's, like, goes on for so long needlessly and is less integral to anything else that happens in the movie is the scene in Fargo where Frances McDormand meets her old friend from high school. He just is talking about his dead wife and like how sad things have been.
Oh, I love that scene. And then it turns out
he was never really married to that lady and she's still alive. And Frank Yonagina has nothing to do with the plot. There was no reason for that scene to exist. It was just some weird fucking thing plopped down in the middle of a movie that's completely about other stuff just to show you that, like, hey folks, there's pain out there in the world.
Yeah, like sometimes you just run into shit.
Sometimes some random shit stuff runs gonna into bubble you. Up in this crazy world.
Yeah. Oh, that's like dynamite.
You're such a super lady. And then I've been so lonely.
As far as fights go, the only other thing I can think of that tops this and is just more ridiculous, the old John Wayne and John Ford movie, The Quiet Man. It's,
isn't it like by a campfire or something?
No. It's a rare movie that's not a Western that John Ford and John Wayne collaborated on. And I'm sure this has got to be one that's
probably... Which is the fight scene where, like,
parodied.
John Wayne's beating the shit out of somebody by a campfire and it breaks down into the water and he ends up, like, slitting the guy's throat in the water.
Oh, that's Red River. That's got a real good one. He's gleefully just jumps off a cliff into, like, the fucking river. Yeah. That's a great scene. But no, this one, John Wayne plays like a boxer who I think accidentally killed a guy in the ring.
Who hasn't?
He inherits some property back in Ireland where his family came from, and he goes out there, and everybody in the town's just like, you're an American idiot. We're fucking from Ireland. Like,
I'm from Ireland.
We don't want you come into our town. And so anyways, he's trying to like rebuild his old family estate, and of course he comes across a woman and falls in love with a woman, but then the main antagonist is this woman's older brother, I think, a family member. I think his older brother. And he's like, nah, you can't marry this fucking yank. And just it builds to a little bit of like romantic tension until the entire last 30 minutes of the movie is just John Wayne and this man fist fighting to like earn his respect. And they just like fist fight all through the countryside, all through the town. That's and like nice. It just lasts and lasts and lasts. And like the whole town gets involved and they just won't stop throwing punches.
Gentlemen, if you please, this is a private fight. The Marquess of Queensbury rules will be observed on all occasions.
Yeah, the Marquess of Queensbury rules, mind you now, Squire.
Non-belligerents will kindly remain in neutral. Now, shake hands and come out fighting. I thank you.
Do you hear that, everybody? The Marquess of Queensbury rules.
No, the Marquess of Queensbury rules.
Marquess of Queensbury rules.
Come on, get up, Marquess of Queensbury.
You've had enough.
Now.
We'll give a man a hand then.
This is like another one, I'm sure, like fucking probably Family Guy's not high-minded enough to do a parody of this. They're doing They Live parodies, but like some other people have to have fucking parodied this shit because it's just like
probably,
ridiculous.
Probably Family it's like Guy. They do that
20-minute long fucking
Peter
fist
and
fight
the chicken
scene.
Fight.
Father, shouldn't we put a stop to it now?
We should, lad. Yes, we should. It's our duty. It's our duty.
Good fight, man. I'll say that for you.
Well, if it comes to that, it's been a pleasure beating you.
Yeah,
all
the
time.
It's some great. It's John Wayne showing a little bit of humor in this one. Like, he gets to have a big fight.
Flashing a little ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He gets to do some of that romance stuff that usually only lasted 2 or 3 minutes in his cowboy movies. But, yeah, it's another side of John Wayne. And The Quiet Man, that's another one I'm going to throw out there as a recommendation. Just
The Quiet Man.
Now that it comes up and we're talking about ridiculously long fist fights.
Drink before you kill yourself. The drink will be on the house.
That's a good idea, Sean. The people from Ballyglone are coming over by bus. Thousands of them.
Hey, that's a good idea. Now that I'm tired, mind you, I'm as fresh as a daisy.
You look more like a black-eyed Susan to me. Let's go. I'm buying the drinks.
You can buy me a drink at your wake. Not before.
I'm buying. What time is it?
5:30, sir.
We've been going on long.
Okay, we're almost to an hour.
We got to give these people
That's
a five.
Because my number five is very short.
What's that?
Let me get back to it here. Let me get back to the notes. I'm going to say Meg Foster plays the pseudo romantic interest in this movie. Just the lady that Roddy Piper comes across and he kidnaps a little bit, and then maybe she likes him, maybe she doesn't. There's some romantic tension.
Probably doesn't.
She comes back later. She doesn't believe him at first. She kind of believes him earlier. And I'm going to say Meg Foster in this movie is this movie's version of Baby Doll from 80s.
Wow. Anyway. The perfect 10?
The perfect 10 Baby
You're saying
Doll.
She's the perfect 10 to you.
She's got a really weird, just manly face. She's got, Baby Doll's got like dead eyes, but she's got like these crazy
witch
bright
eyes.
Blue witch eyes. These crazy witch eyes, but like, it's not in a good way. Like, ooh, look at those eyes. There's like, with her face, it's just like, ugh. Not just, this is all just too severe. Every feature of her is just too severe. And I feel like we're getting a lot of close-ups on her. Like,
oh,
we get a
many,
baby doll
many.
On this NWA.
Yeah. Like, look how good-looking she
yeah,
is.
Like, every scene we get
Look at
her,
how good-looking she
it's
is.
It's just like a dialogue two-shot close-up where you're getting a close-up of Piper and then a close-up of her. So you just got to stare at her face a lot.
That's fair.
And nothing going on with her works. And I'm just like, this is who they got for the fucking female role in this one?
We talked about it earlier. She was way hotter as Evil Lyn in Masters of the Universe.
Yeah. You darken that hair up a little
like
bit.
Like, you wanna bone Meg Foster
She's
at
got,
any point?
Like, red hair in this one. Yeah. It's not enough of a contrast with her pale-ass skin.
Yeah.
You get some dark hair. That's a nice contrast a little bit. You get
Masters
some of that,
of
like,
the Universe is where it's at, dog.
Goth girl hotness going on.
Hey, real quick, their bum buddy that's got the TV in the hobo village.
Oh,
and
sure,
he's like,
sure.
Well,
he gets brainwashed.
Well.
He comes back
it's
as like a classic 80s
and then he comes
hot
back,
guy
and he's like,
in a top hat.
And
I'm
bought in. The aliens
tuxedo tails.
That bad. You know who? What other 80s film he was in?
Oh, no. What is it?
He
definitely rang a bell when I was watching him.
He's the bum in Back to the Future.
Perfect. That's
him.
He's using the same voice in both, so maybe that's not a put-on voice. That's,
that's him.
Oh, wow. It's good to see him get some more work. And I
Crazy
knew,
drunk pedestrian.
I knew that voice was coming out to me from somewhere in my past. I just couldn't place it. I was thinking, too. I was thinking hobo. I was like, he's not one of the fucking hobos
like
and, like, coming to America, because that's just the two rich guys from fucking Trading
from
Places.
Muppets,
so...
The two rich guys from the Muppets.
It's all getting confused. So let's take a little break.
Yeah.
Let's get some ad dollars rolling in.
And then?
What are we going to do?
Freak out.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
In the future, after the big war, there will come a time to rebuild and a need for a new and special kind of soldier.
This man is carrying a loaded weapon.
Prepare to meet the next great American hero.
That's where you come in.
Are you serious?
His name is...
Hell. Sam Hell.
Never heard of you.
We're going to Frogtown.
And this is the adventure he's been waiting for.
We're gonna get him out, and then you're gonna get him pregnant.
And if anyone's got a chance in hell of rescuing the virgins from the evil clutches of Toady...
It's a miracle.
Right. Let's go.
And escaping from Frogtown...
Go, 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 go!
It's Sam.
Shit. Holy shit!
Be there for the action. The adventure.
Oh, Sam.
What are you doing?
And be there for the dance of the three snakes.
Dance or die!
We're all gonna die.
When Hell Comes to Frogtown. Starring Rowdy Roddy Piper as Sam.
Turn it off!
You are one weird dude.
Sandel Bergman as Nurse Spangle.
Wired to blow.
Hell Comes to Frogtown.
Eat lamp, froggies!
Three count, I'm talking about wrestling. Three count, it has to do with wrestling. Three count.
You can just keep that going all night.
This week it's not about wrestling.
Ooh.
Nice. A little bit about wrestling.
That's nice, yeah.
It's a little bit not about wrestling.
Yeah.
But this time we're talking once again about 80s movies getting recast with 80s wrestlers. We did it last time and we were like, we got so many good ideas, we got to do another one. We just got to come back and do this again. We made you that promise and here we are doing it again.
A long time ago.
I would never lie to you.
In the same podcast, two men, three movies, different 80s wrestlers.
Sequels are so hot, so we're doing a three count part two here.
Three count. The sequel.
This might turn into a whole franchise. We could have like a whole Marvel universe of just recastings we do.
Hey, speaking of the franchise, shout out to our homeboy, Epico Cologne.
Huh? Yeah.
New friend of the show, just supporting us.
Big time.
On our jokes about Shane Douglas being addicted to drugs.
Everybody can laugh at Shane Douglas.
Yeah.
There's one thing that draws us all together. It's being able to look at Shane Douglas and point and laugh.
If I would have known
once that again, it was, we're not looking like heroes here. We're not the good guys. We're not gonna sit here and tell you that we're the good guys in all this, because that's definitely not true.
Hey, how many of you came here to listen to WCW?
No. Was,
and how many of you came here to listen to Baby Oil and Blow?
Definitely me. Probably most other people too. So let's get to our content. So we're not boring these people with our fucking self-aggrandizing chatter.
This is the shit they listen to, bro.
What's your number three? Okay. Recasting of an 80s movie with 80s wrestlers to make it a better thing than what it was.
Okay.
Maybe a better thing. Maybe not a better thing. Maybe just a different thing.
What was the movie that we watched last time?
That was Hulk Hogan starring in The Searchers.
No.
I forget the name of it.
It was him and he's fighting a guy and they were fighting a fight.
No Holds Barred. Yeah, we watched No Holds Barred.
That's it. And it was...
I gotta tell you, They Live, much better movie than No Holds Barred. We're moving up in the world as far as our movie episodes
true,
go.
True, but like No Holds Barred...
It's got its charms.
It was a movie, right?
You could say that. Now, that's not controversial.
You could say a lot of the problems we ran into were... Well, pretty much one Hulk Hogan, right?
I remember a lot of the problems we ran into was just trying to explain the plot, and it took us a good 40 minutes rambling, and we're like, we still haven't explained it, but also there is no plot.
But how about all the times like they tried to present Hulk Hogan as this like character that he wasn't?
He's not likable. He's not a ladies' man. He's not a hero. Like, he's none of these things.
So put a pin right there in it for just one second.
Okay.
And what if I say...
You're building out something here. What if I don't know where we're going.
What if I say Hulk Hogan's not in that movie at all?
You're recasting No Holds Barred?
What if I tell you Davey and Jimmy Crockett had the idea?
Oh, God.
And they cast it.
They gotta cast one of their wrestlers, and they cast Davey Crockett in it.
With Magnum T...
Ooh, I could see that. Similar look to Hogan, but far sexier.
Right?
Much more likable.
Like, instantly, this is kind of a sexy movie right here.
Hairy chest. I always appreciate when wrestlers don't wax their chests.
Yeah.
Don't wax your chest, gentlemen. Fucking chest hair. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Chicks love that shit. Tom Selleck?
HBK brought it back.
HBK, thank God for his mid-90s chest
balls.
Hair. He really...
Like, look at Seth Rollins now. Like, he looks like a fucking dork, but is like
he totally waxed all down. They all.
He's got hair. He's got hair. He? Yeah.
Oh, he's just not pulling it off.
But he's still the fucking pencil neck geek we know him as.
Oh yeah.
Remember, I'm gonna tell you right now.
Remember
and like,
when you were sneaking beers into ROH shows, fucking Seth Rollins.
Like I don't care how many straps he's held. I feel like I could kick his ass.
We knew you back when you were nothing. You draft necked loser.
Any fucking day, I could beat his ass.
Well, I'm gonna be a wrestler someday. Me and my friend snuck these beers in here.
Show some goddamn respect.
Dry fucking venue. And it's like, yeah, you're a loser.
Yeah,
you're not going to be a wrestler. He's a loser. Fucking keep dreaming big, kid. That's but, what we told you.
Magnum TA, isn't that a sexy pick? Like, couldn't you see that movie?
Definitely.
Like, the whole fucking, like, sleeping in the hotel, like butt shots.
Maybe, like, a Sam Houston playing his, like, semi-retarded younger brother.
Oh, I like that a lot. Oh, Nikita Koloff, because they were, like, buddies once Magnum TA got injured, you know?
Oh, that makes a lot of
sense.
He's
like, you're my older brother, I love you so much.
People be like, oh, this is so sad. He has to take care of his younger brother, Nikita, who clearly...
Big strong Mongol.
Clearly has
yeah.
some issues. Yeah. Like he can't take care of himself. Just listen to him talk.
Yeah, it's got legs, don't it?
No, I think that would have been maybe not a more successful movie financially because he didn't have the juices.
It
of
doesn't.
Hulk Hogan,
it doesn't matter. It
but
just,
that movie wasn't financially successful anyways.
Structurally, it
so
just,
as a film, it would have been much more successful.
Him
as
just
a thing.
Him rolling up on a motorcycle, rescuing his love lady from a rape. Lady love.
Lady loves. It could have just been. Could have just baby doll. Could have just played her.
Oh, she would have been great.
So good.
Please don't rape me.
That scene where she's all putting on her sexy lingerie in the hotel room. It's a totally different movie.
I'm telling you.
It's one that I want to watch much more.
You agree with it, don't you?
I want to watch
You agree with it, don't you?
So I've got a kind of a theme going here where I'm just picking like big iconic movies and I'm just running with them.
Yeah.
That's not true. My second movie kind of sucks. Okay, I swapped one out. For a while there, I had that theme, but now I just got like two big iconic movies and the one that kind of sucks. By the way, my first one's a big iconic movie. It's 1984, James Cameron directed The Terminator.
I kick this one around.
Real good.
Let me see what you
real got. Real solid, real simple structure. The type of movie you can plug pro wrestlers in because it's not much about dialogue. It's just more about physicality. It's just more about presence. So what you need, you got Arnold Schwarzenegger playing a big hulking presence who can't speak English very well, just very thick accent, can't really fucking, you know, monologue or make his points. So I'm saying, who do you get in that role? I'm saying, like, what if we did a WWE version of this, WWF? Let's get Andre in there. He's an actor. He's got acting experience. He's going to be this hulking fucking stomping killer right there.
Hey, I'll be back.
49 millimeter.
Anybody want a peanut?
49 millimeter.
There's nobody just a more fucking menacing presence than Andre. You can keep that whole horror movie vibe in there, but that's not the bulk of the movie. The bulk of the movie is like you need...
Did you recast Michael Biehn or Linda Hamilton? And, don't tell me you recast Michael Biehn.
Both.
You son of a bitch.
Both. You need...
Tread softly here, pal.
You need a damsel in distress. You need like a typical every woman who can show some vulnerability.
Oh, Elizabeth is always in distress.
I'm putting Miss Elizabeth.
She's always in distress.
In there as
are you doing
the Sarah Connor character.
Oh, God.
And who do you get to be the paranoid seeming psycho showing up talking about just rambling about...
You just made this movie so much
else. Visions
of
the future.
I come from the future.
Everything's... the whole world's going to hell. Everybody's against you. Everything could be dangerous, man. I'm telling you.
Oh, excuse me.
Don't trust those machines.
Have you seen Sarah Connor?
See that coffee machine right there, man? Seems real convenient.
Yeah,
get your coffee real quick. Slippery slope. You got these machines,
the
man.
The Terminators
take over.
Always rise to the top.
I'm looking over my shoulder. I'm wondering what the next machine that's going to take us out
I'm
is.
I'm at this 1980s disco
tell you,
tech.
Man,
dig it.
I'm going to fight back.
no fate, brother. No fate but what we make. And that one night, me and Elizabeth, we loved enough to love a lifetime.
Made a John Connor, yeah.
Michael Biehn, strong actor, but I mean, there's anybody that can match the screen presence of a Michael Biehn.
It's like my favorite Michael Biehn role outside of, I'm going to say, Navy SEALs.
Oh, he's real good in Navy SEALs.
But like,
you jack up a fucking,
you take
Randy
him out
Savage
of there.
Is there anybody who seems more like he was torn out of a post-apocalyptic future and he doesn't know what's going on?
Yeah, his
Randy
whole life
Savage
is just turmoil.
Like, that was basically his gimmick.
Yeah. Wow.
I think that could work out.
It's so spot on. Him just sawing through the back end of that shotgun in the alleyway, like just trying to deal with things.
Bob, Andre the Giant.
Hey, who's in 9mm?
My CPU is a neural net processor. Learning computer.
So who plays Bill Paxton in that movie?
Oh, just Bill Paxton. I'm not gonna recast
that. Okay, that's fair.
Not recasting a legend.
I love that guy so much, man.
Definitely, he's so good.
So good. So your turn or my turn?
That was my turn. It's going on.
It's my
turn.
Yeah. All right. So we're at number two.
Told us we needed to keep this quick or we'd lose the thread of what we're doing here.
Are you sure that wasn't like your big finish? Like, that's strong, man.
It's very strong.
Oof.
Maybe I should have
it up. It's great because Andre hated Macho.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Those
so he'd,
two.
He'd really want to kill him.
Those two, you could feel the tension on set.
I don't like how much baby oil he wears.
Okay, my number two. In the 80s.
I remember it well.
There's that 80s gentleman we love that made a lot of 80s movies we love.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I'm thinking about 80s gentlemen, and I was like, are we talking Mr. Belvedere again? I thought we covered him last week.
Different one. He made a movie about a boxer.
Mm-hmm.
He made a movie about a Vietnam veteran.
Okay.
What's his name?
I don't make the best movies, but I make pretty good movies.
So,
you know, I'm Sylvester Stallone. Yeah. I try my best, though. My movie's pretty good. If you gotta see better movies out in the theaters, but I mean, like,
I'm doing my thing.
You wanna go see a movie that's like pretty good, like saw a movie like
it's about people. It's a movie about people.
You can see worse movies and you go see my movie. Yeah.
So he makes a movie about boxing in the 80s, right?
Mm-hmm. That was called Rocky.
But he's got a wrestler.
In case you didn't know. Anybody out there doesn't know.
He's got a wrestler in one of them.
Thunderlips.
Right?
Hulk Hogan.
Okay. So
Hulk Hogan.
So now what if the same producers that made the hit film that I'm talking about in 1987, if they took a closer look at Thunderlips instead of Rocky Balboa, and maybe instead of...
Are you talking about Stop or My Mom Will Shoot?
Nope. instead of Stallone as Lincoln Hawk.
Oh, whoa.
We get Hulk Hogan
showing his
as
emotional
truck
side.
Driver Lincoln Hawk in
over the top. You'd have to like be able to build a real like believable father-son relationship there.
Yeah.
Like I
feel
like Hulk Hogan spent his whole career pandering to children.
Right. Yeah.
So he's pretty much like got that down.
He would feel awful if he wasn't there for a child
he's bearing. Part of that pile driver shoot for that music video. So he like can wear working man's clothes.
Yeah, he can.
Like definitely he could pull off being a trucker.
And then like don't forget like the whole reason he comes back into the kid's life is because the mother is gravely ill.
Oh yeah.
And like
because
why
else would you let that
Hogan
fucking
just,
idiot
Hogan
character
just being
back
like,
into your son's life.
Ooh, I'm torn up that you're dying. Ooh, I'm so sad that you're dying.
He could do all that emoting that he was doing in No Holds Barred that we love so much.
So he's
a lot
there
of like shaking his head around a fucking silly cartoon character emoting.
He's doing a little bit of that Dutch road trip like trying to find common ground.
Dutch is a solid fucking movie.
Ooh,
one of my top road trip movies ever. Ed O'Neill, fucking just the ultimate stepdad. Like, how could that little shit kid be so mad that his new stepdad's fucking Dutch, Ed O'Neill? Like,
maybe I should just change my number two to Dutch starring Dick Murdoch.
Yeah. Ethan Embry, you're getting thrown out of here. It's Dick Murdoch and
David
Todd Pettengill.
Oh, either way. Either way. It's a solid film. But think about it, man. Like, Hulk Hogan, like, can't believe his old girl died, and he's stuck with this kid, and he feels awful that he wasn't there for that kid. Like, Hulk hates that shit. Like, he'd, like, want to write right?
Absolutely.
And, like, we've seen...
He's got a son out there. He's got to teach him about the demandments. What if this kid grows up not knowing about the demandments?
Yeah, like, Hogan's like, I'm going to show you. Like, I'm going to enter this competition, brother. I'm going to be there. I'm, like, the man, brother. And, like, we've seen bad 80s arm wrestling matches. What if you had one of those?
Did a lot of them in wrestling.
But with Hulk Hogan's facial gestures?
Yes, like we were talking about last week, where he could sell anything. A fucking just tie up, a test of strength, anything. He can sell it with his face and get the audience involved and put over the emotion.
I love Stallone, but he's only got half of his mouth to work with.
Yeah.
Imagine if you had Hogan in there. Just selling that shit for real, dude.
If you combined Sylvester Stallone and Jim Ross, you'd have the perfect actor. They could emote with that whole face. It'd be impressive.
You'd
have a real Hulk Hogan.
Real quick side story. Mm-hmm. I watched an episode of WCW Saturday Night from like 91 or 92.
That's good watching
And Jim Ross is hosting it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the very beginning of the episode. And like he like lays out like, and coming to you next on Saturday Night, you know? And then that just shows their faces, him and Teddy Long.
Oh.
And Jim Ross flashes a full smile.
Oh, wow. That's
the creepiest fucking thing I've ever seen,
I'm used to seeing that.
I'm just like, cut away, man. Cut away.
Got some Uncanny Valley stuff going on here. Who built this Jim Ross bot? You didn't get all the details right.
But come on, think about it. You support this.
No, definitely. Yeah. Those arm wrestling scenes would be taking up a fucking
just him
notch.
Him
shaking his hair back and forth. Whoosh.
And then he like takes his hand off the handle for support and just does like the Hogan no.
Yeah. That might have been his perfect role. Talk about how he never became a big superstar like The Rock or whatever.
Yeah. Put him in that shit. Opportunity missed. Yeah.
Could have happened.
Yeah.
Whew. My number two is Buddy Cop movie. Came out right at the height of the Buddy Cop movie getting just made into a huge thing by Lethal Weapon.
I'm listening because you know I love Buddy Cop.
Talking about
shit.
1989's Tango and Cash.
Tread lightly, friend. You know this is one of my favorite films.
Two iconic actors, the aforementioned Sylvester Stallone, and also, you know, Kurt Russell, who we've talked about a little bit before.
A lot.
Two 80s icons, two people who we love. Like, I'm not saying these guys need to be replaced. I'm just saying, like, if you're going to remake Tango and Cash and you're going to replace them with wrestlers, who could go in there, who could do a respectable job, who could be
the
two?
I've got an idea, but
like,
I want to hear what you say.
Okay, I'm saying Tango and Cash. How about instead Razor and Nash? We get the Outsiders, Big Daddy Cool Diesel.
Ooh, you're invoking the NBA
Scott
Jam
Hall in there.
Rule, sir.
Oh, yeah,
like
we
it.
Can
yeah.
go all the way up to 1993. We've
like
established
that.
On this podcast.
Like,
so I'm saying you get Ray Tango, that was his name, right? The straight-laced one who's all about making money.
Yeah.
That's Kevin Nash, man. Who's more about making money in wrestling than Kevin Nash? That's all he cares about. And you got the wild man, Cash. He's out there.
Cole Cash.
He's drunk. He's fucking belligerent.
He's
That's
a wild
Scott Hall.
Man.
That man can't keep himself together. And these guys have just like undeniable chemistry. We've seen them do things together over the years, and you know it never amounts to much because Scott Hall always gets fired because of his fucking drug addiction or whatever. Or Kevin Nash like fucking gets injured or decides he doesn't want to do anything, but whatever. We saw it in fucking that movie They Live, where Roddy Piper was twice as jacked for a movie role as he ever was to be a pro wrestler.
Right? Yeah.
These guys would be on their best behavior to be in a movie, man. They'd get through it. They'd do it
Scott
great.
Scott Hall would just be walking on his own.
Handsome as 10 movie stars, that man. He'd be great in this shit. You got a number one?
I do.
Okay, good.
I fought long and hard with this.
I'm wondering if we're going to have the same number one, because I know I picked a movie that we both love.
I don't love this movie.
Oh, okay, we don't then.
So
we don't. Going in different directions.
It just kind of struck me.
Remember last time we both picked Rain Man, which was really weird. How did that happen?
Well, I love that movie. This movie really wanted to just kind of put Don Morocco in there. playing.
Are you just making a Fuji Vice movie?
I wanted to.
Michael Mann's remake of Miami Vice.
I wanted
with
to.
Don Morocco.
I wanted to. I like the idea of Don Morocco just playing a dorky high school kid. And then
I like that idea too. This is some weird thinking, but I'm into it.
Yeah, and then I just realized like it's just too far fetched. Okay. And then I remembered the NBA Jam rule
mm-hmm.
of 1993.
Oh, smart.
And I decided, what if you take Mr. Fuji from Fuji Vice
mm-hmm.
and you put him with the 1-2-3 kid, but you call him the Karate Kid?
Okay, fucking pre-goatee Sean Waltman.
Correct.
Could have definitely been a Daniel LaRusso type.
There you go.
That's for damn sure.
So you got 1-2-3 kid in mm-hmm. the Daniel Russo role.
That's
you
gross.
Got Mr. Fuji in the Pat Morita role.
Neither are very good at speaking English, so it tracks. It tracks.
His name was also Mr. Fuji in Karate Kid.
Bonsai, Daniel-san.
Yeah.
Bonsai.
Or something like that. And really, it's just an excuse for those two to be in Karate Kid.
It
I don't really
so
have any more to tell you.
To me.
If you want to, extra credit,
mm-hmm.
you can have Shawn Michaels be Johnny. And,
oh, Johnny
and
Karate.
You can have Ric Flair be, what's his face from
the
Cobra
head
Kai?
Of the Cobra yeah. Kai Dojo?
Yeah, yeah.
It makes a lot of sense.
Like if you want to.
No, I do, but only if you're going to allow me to have Fabulous Moolah play Daniel LaRusso's mother.
That's sexy as fuck.
Yeah, there we
and
go.
It makes perfect sense.
It's all coming together.
Yeah. I just like the idea of just 1-2-3 kid and Fuji.
Yeah, fucking Danielson out on those pillars on the beach just yeah. doing his crane kick. Yeah. Mr. Fuji's standing there in his little tuxedo. Fucking,
yeah. He's got the hat. He's got the cane, the little walking stick.
The iconography is classic. It's all
yeah.
coming together. It's mostly just because fucking Ralph Macchio's got a stupid face in that movie. And Shawn Waltman has
Shawn
a
Waltman.
Stupid face. That tracks.
Him getting beat up by those bullies in
that
the junkyard
tracks.
On his bicycle.
Yeah, 80s Shawn Michaels.
Mom picking him up.
Johnny, too. And Marty Jannetty could be just one of the Cobra Kai guys.
Oh,
that you
absolutely.
About. The one that says, put him in a body bag.
Put him in a body bag.
That's going to be Marty Jannetty.
Sweep the leg, Johnny.
My number one, we're creeping into the 90s, but you know, I'm not even touching upon the 93 NBA Jam rule, so I'm well within our right to say in this. It's a movie we both love, a movie we both watched a million times, even together, something we hold dear, directed by Kathryn Bigelow, Point Break.
Watch out now. Watch out now.
There's a lot
you
of
be
recasting.
Careful. You be careful about
what
you say here.
There's a lot of recasting you got to do to get this movie to the point where it needs to be, because this movie's an ensemble.
When did this come out?
Ensemble.
In 92?
1991. 1991 release, Point Break.
God damn.
So
I didn't even realize, and I've seen this movie a million times.
Quantico, Blue Flamer, Johnny Utah. You need a young guy, fresh-faced, greasy-haired, kind of cocky but pretty wooden.
Yeah.
I'm saying Bret Hart. Bret Hart in there as Johnny Utah. He's got a partner, Angelo Pappas. He's a little gruff. He's a little old. He's a lot drunk. Bret Hart's got chemistry with Jim Neidhart. You just have Jim Neidhart in there as Angelo Pappas. And you have those two being FBI agents together.
I'm listening.
There's a lot of
I'm
charisma
listening.
There. They're like, and then, but there's a yin to the yang in this movie.
Yeah.
You can't just have a
you
Johnny
got,
Utah
you, without a Swayze.
You need a Bodie. You need
Bodie's
a fucking
alpha.
Chilled out 80s surfer beach guy. And who's more of a chilled out 80s surfer beach guy?
John Laurinaitis.
Venice Beach's own Hulk Hogan as Bodie, the Bodhisattva. With his surf gang, Brother Brutai and the Nasty
say,
Boys.
Wow.
Brother Brutai and the Nasty
you
Boys.
You didn't one fell swoop with all his real guys.
So there you go. You got this whole thing, but there's another character.
Who the fuck is Lori Petty?
There's another character who connects the two, Johnny Utah and Bodie, man. Somebody who's dated them both. Somebody who brings them together. Somebody who starts their bromance.
I'm casting one you didn't, but continue.
You need somebody who's got some experience with Hogan and Brett. That's why Lori Petty's character is Jimmy Hart and drag. Just Jimmy Hart and drag playing a woman.
Oh.
As Lori Petty. And you got yourself a Point Break.
I don't think I can teach you, brother. That board's pretty big and stupid. Are you from the Midwest or something? I don't know. My mother's dead.
All right, all right, all right. Okay, all right. Let's get serious for a couple of fucking seconds.
I was serious about all this. That's a movie that I would watch.
This is a real fucking movie here. So, Bret Hart, he's like, I got these guys. I got these guys.
Hey, I just came down from Calgary. Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to learn how to be a surfer, you know?
Hey, we're gonna kick in these doors. We're watching them. We're going to break in the doors. We're going to get these guys. I'm going to chase after them. I almost get my face cut off by a lawnmower.
Hey, I got a theory here. I think they might be surfers. Yeah. Goatee stroke.
So who's playing Tom Sizemore when the big raid goes wrong?
Yeah, okay, there's got to be a Tom Sizemore. That makes sense.
Arn Anderson.
Oh, double A.
You think he likes having this long hair?
Having this hair, man. Just Arn trying to grab the wisps of hair still on the top of his head.
Like, you see that, right?
Yeah, just pulling and pulling. Just, yeah, that's perfect.
Gold chain around his neck.
Just bring Marty Jannetty back in as that Anthony Kiedis character shooting himself in the foot because he's too drugged out to be a fucking criminal.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Naked karate woman who kicks the shit out of everybody in the drug raid.
Medusa?
Let's just do woman. I think woman. Okay. Yeah, Nancy Sullivan.
Oh, yeah, she'd do it.
Oh, yeah, she'd be real good. Plus,
for
I just kind of want to see 80s Nancy Sullivan naked and doing karate.
Yeah.
Oh, man, this Point Break thing, there was a real revelation to me. I was like, Hulk Hogan is Bodie? Yeah, man, this is what he was born for. This
guy's from
the beach.
He only lives
to
get radical.
Hey, you know, we're gonna spend all day. We're gonna jerk each other off.
Yeah,
or we're gonna jump, huh?
It's got to go down, eh? It's gotta be that way, you know.
Well, let me tell you something, brother. You know I can't handle the cage, brother.
That's true. Hogan always got busted open during
those
cage matches.
He always did. He can't handle a cage.
He cannot handle a cage.
I'm gonna tell you right now, if you're following us on the Instagram, just get ready for a picture of Hogan bleeding inside Big Blue.
Get ready for
with you can't you know I can't handle the cage,
a
brother.
Lot of MS Paint mock-ups of these fake movies.
Yeah, I'm gonna do some work.
MS Painting the hell out of these things.
I feel so good about
next
it.
Week on Baby Oil and Blow.
We gotta go back to the
back
real world.
To wrestling. We're going back to World Championship Wrestling.
Damn it.
February 20th, 1988, World Championship Wrestling. We'll watch it. We'll review it. Maybe we'll get through it.
Spoiler alert, nothing happened, but we'll talk about it on Baby Oil and Blow.